Welcome back to the deep dive. You know, if you've ever glanced at the equations that try to model, well, almost anything complex, physics, finance, how fluids move, they're already tough.
Right.
But then you add randomness into the mix, stochastic noise, and suddenly things can feel almost impossible to penetrate.
Absolutely. Impenetrable is a good word for it sometimes.
So today, we're trying to find a bit of a shortcut, maybe, through that complexity.
Yeah, that's the plan. We're diving deep into some, let's be honest, pretty technical research. It's all about the LD2 theory of stochastic partial differential equations, SPDEs for short.
SPDEs.
And we're really looking at the bedrock stuff here. Do these equations, the ones with randomness baked in, even have unique solutions? Mm-hmm. And are those solutions predictable, you know, smooth enough to be useful?
Okay, so our sources are deep in the weeds of these specialized mathematical spaces. What's the big problem they're trying to crack?
The core issue, really, is getting solutions that aren't just, like, mathematically valid on paper, but are smooth. Smooth enough to actually use for modeling things.
Like predicting stock prices or...
Exactly, or how heat spreads in a material, things like that. Now, the way people tackle this for, well, decades, was using something called Tolentu theory.
Tolentu, okay.
But the big insight in the material we're looking at is that we need to generalize. We need to move beyond Tolentu, that's the where this index, PQ2 equals 2, to a more flexible OLT2 theory. Here, P2 can be 2, or it can be bigger.
All right, let's unpack that a bit. You said Tolentu theory was used for decades, even described as complete and satisfactory in some contexts. So why the sudden need to move on? What's inconvenient about sticking with Porter 2-2?
Well, it's not that the Tolentu math is incorrect. It's more that it's maybe too rigid. Tolentu 2 framework, it uses what's called a Hilbert space structure.
Hilbert space. Sounds neat.
It is. Mathematically, it's very elegant. The geometry is tidy, sort of like standard Euclidean space in some ways. And this often means proofs are cleaner. You can use standard tools like integration by parts quite effectively.
Okay, cleaner proofs sound like a good thing. So where does it start to, you know, cause problems? Where's the catch?
The catch really comes in when you start demanding smoothness in the solution. That's the critical limitation, the aha moment, if you like.
Smoothness again. So like how many times you can differentiate the solution?
Exactly. In 22 theory, if you want your solution, $20 to be, say, continuously differentiable or twice continuously differentiable, which you absolutely need for reliable models, the requirements it puts on the inputs.
The initial conditions, the coefficients.
Precisely. The requirements on those coefficients become, frankly, unreasonably tough.
How tough?
Well, the math works out such that to get a solution that's differentiable 2e times, the coefficients often need to be differentiated more than a plus 2 times, where doodly is the dimension of your problem.
Okay, model plus D2, 2, 2. That sounds complicated, but the key is more than dollar.
Right. And in practice, especially if you're working in, say, 3 dimensions, this $2, 2 term really bites. Hmm. It often means your input data, your real-world measurements, just aren't smooth enough to satisfy the theory.
So the tall ball 2 approach basically says, I can only solve this problem if the system you're feeding me is already incredibly well-behaved and smooth.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, it's too demanding on the starting point.
Okay, so this is where the big idea comes in. How does just changing that index, that P, from 2 to something else fix this? How does that suddenly give you more flexibility without, I don't know, breaking the math?
It's actually a really clever mathematical lever. By moving to these more general spaces, Sobolev spaces, Copn dollar, or these things called Bessel potential spaces, each Pn dollar, you fundamentally change the trade-off, the balance between how many derivatives you have in a generalized sense and how smooth the result is.
What's the new equation for that trade-off?
So remember, in $12, for the solution to be nicely continuous, you needed $2.
Right.
In the L dollar world, the condition becomes 2NDD.
Ah, T dollar times dollar is greater than dollars.
Exactly. And here's the kicker. Key Ehlers isn't fixed at 2 anymore. We can choose Tn to be, well, pretty much as large as we need it to be. Mm-hmm. Maybe P$10, maybe P$500.
Okay, I think I see it. Instead of needing a huge N, meaning tons of derivatives on your inputs, you can satisfy the condition Pnd dollars by just making P really big.
That's the core insight. You shift the burden, in a sense, from the smoothness of the inputs related to N onto this summability exponent P.
So you get the regularity you need, the smoothness, by basically leveraging a mathematical property related to how functions are summed up, rather than demanding impossible perfection from your starting data.
Precisely. As the source material puts it, by taking dollars large enough, the solutions have almost as many usual derivatives as generalized ones. You get smooth, usable results without needing godlike precision in your coefficients.
It feels like a neat mathematical trick. But does using a really big P cause other headaches? Does it make the computations harder or introduce new theoretical hurdles? Are we just swapping one problem for another?
That's a very fair point. And the answer lies in the analytical machinery they build around this old Pahlbauer idea. The proof that this all works, that you get existence and uniqueness of solutions in these Pahlbauer spaces, hinges on something called the maximal regularity property of stochastic convolutions.
Okay, maximal regularity of stochastic convolutions. That sounds formidable. Can you break that down?
Let's try. Think of stochastic convolutions as basically how the random noise gets integrated or folded into the solution as time goes on.
Okay, how the randomness propagates.
Yeah. Maximal regularity is a property that essentially guarantees this process behaves well in these Pahlbauer spaces.
Yeah.
It's like a crucial bridge. It lets you use the very powerful, very precise tools from deterministic analysis, the math, for systems without noise, and apply them effectively to these stochastic systems, the ones with noise.
So without this maximal regularity property, the Pahlbauer trick might not work reliably when things change over time.
Exactly. It might fall apart. Maximal regularity is what gives the theory its robustness, especially for time-dependent problems. It confirms things are stable and predictable within this new framework.
And that stability is what allows the leap from simpler linear equations to the really complex ones.
Yes, precisely. It lets us move confidently from linear SPDEs, where the coefficients are just given, fixed numbers or functions, to the much more challenging and often more realistic world of quasi-linear SPDEs.
Right, quasi-linear. Let's make that jump. Because in the real world, things are rarely perfectly linear, are they? In quasi-linear equations, the coefficients themselves depend on the solution.
That's the key difference and the source of the complexity. The equation's parameters, its coefficients, are no longer fixed. They actually change based on the value of the solution, I or itself.
So the solution is kind of feeding back into the equation and changing the rules as it goes along.
That's a perfect way to think about it. It's self-referential. The solution influences the coefficients, which in turn influence the solution. This feedback loop means the neat, tidy geometry of the Tolentu-Hilbert space often isn't flexible enough anymore. We need a different kind of mathematical container to hold and measure these solutions.
And that's where more sophisticated structures come in.
Correct. The research lays out the construction of these Banach spaces. They're specifically designed to handle this complexity. Think of them as spaces, denoted MathBBHPN plus 2T in the paper, that measure the solution's properties across both space and time simultaneously. They give a unified picture of its regularity.
Okay, so you've got the solution neatly contained in this new Banach space. What useful things can you say about it then? What properties emerge?
A really important one, highlighted in Theorem 3.1 of the source, is high temporal regularity, especially when poverty deters. This tells you not just how smooth the solution is spatially at any given moment, but how smoothly it behaves and changes over time.
And that's crucial for prediction.
Absolutely. If you're building a model to forecast something, you need to know the solution isn't just well-behaved now, but that it evolves smoothly. This temporal regularity is key, even if the input data driving the system is quite rough or noisy.
Okay, so we have this rigorous framework, these special spaces, high temporal regularity. What does it all add up to for the main event? Solving those big, messy, quasi-linear SPDEs.
It delivers the main result, Theorem 3.2, in the source. It essentially says, yes, these general quasi-linear SPDEs do have a unique solution, and that solution lives nicely within our robust L-palatire space, MathBBHPM plus 2TA. But
there's always a but.
There's always a but in math. It holds, provided certain conditions are met. The paper lists six specific assumptions,
yeah.
Assumptions 3.1 through 3.6.
Six assumptions. Okay, rather than getting lost in the mathematical details of all six, can we maybe group them? What are the essential guarantees the system needs to provide for this L-Palor theory to work its magic? What's the gist?
Yeah, we can definitely simplify the essence. You basically need guarantees around three core ideas concerning the equation's coefficients.
Okay, three things. What's the first?
First, you need stability. This is related to what they call the coercivity condition.
Mm.
Fundamentally, it means the system has some kind of self-regulation. It won't just spontaneously spiral out of control or explode.
Makes sense. No infinite solutions allowed. What's second?
Second, you need predictability,
yeah.
Or maybe continuity. The coefficients need to be uniformly continuous. This means small changes in the solution should only lead to small, predictable changes in the equation's behavior. No sudden jumps or crazy sensitivities.
Okay, stable and predictable. And the third?
The third is about appropriate smoothness and compatibility. Basically, the random parts, the noise terms, and how they interact with the system need to be defined in a way that fits well within these LPLN mathematical spaces we're using. They can't be too wild or ill-defined.
So if the system promises to be fundamentally stable, reasonably predictable in its response, and the noise is mathematically manageable within the low-power framework, then you're guaranteed a unique, well-behaved solution.
That's the core promise, yes. The solution exists, it's unique, and it lives in that MathBBHPN+2 space.
That sounds remarkably robust. How do they actually prove this works for the complicated variable coefficients? The source mentioned something about reducing to constant coefficients.
Right. They use some pretty powerful approximation techniques. It's quite clever. They essentially find a way to temporarily simplify the problem. They look at a related equation that does have constant coefficients, which is much easier to solve.
Okay.
They solve that simpler version first. Then, using what are called perturbation results methods for understanding how solutions change when you tweak the equation slightly, they carefully show how the solution to the simple case relates back and gives you the solution for the original complex variable coefficient quasi-linear equation.
So they solve the easy version, then carefully argue that the solution doesn't break when you add the complexity back in.
That's a good way to describe the strategy. It demonstrates the underlying stability of the approach.
All right, let's pivot to where this theory really shows its strength, applications. Where does this LBELLUP approach make the biggest difference right now?
One of the key areas highlighted is dealing with what's arguably the most challenging type of randomness you can encounter, space-time white noise.
Space-time white noise, that just sounds intense, like pure uncorrelated randomness at every single point in space and every single moment in time.
That's exactly what it represents mathematically. It's incredibly singular. The source focuses particularly on the one-dimensional case, where $2 won.
Why is it so difficult to handle?
Because the mathematical object used to model it, typically related to something called a Wiener process or Brownian motion, is very irregular. It's not a smooth function at all. To even make sense of it in the SPDE, you need to embed this randomness into a proper mathematical structure, usually a type of infinite dimensional space called a separable Hilbert space, denoted dollar.
So what does this LPAL theory offer here that Tilfa-2-O couldn't? How does it handle this extreme randomness?
It provides a way to actually define a unique solution in a rigorous space. Specifically, one of these MathBBHPN+2 spaces. The source gives a specific result, theorem 4.1, showing existence for a particular dollar related to the noise properties. $2.2 theory often struggles or completely fails to make sense of solutions driven by this kind of singular noise.
So the fact that Little Math theory can handle space-time white noise, find a unique solution in a well-defined space, is pretty strong evidence of its power.
Absolutely. It demonstrates the theory's robustness. It shows that even when the randomness driving the system is about as wild and uncorrelated as you can imagine, there can still be an underlying mathematical structure and predictability to the solution, thanks to the LBELLUP framework.
Okay, there's one more piece from the theory we need to touch on. Theorem 3.4, the maximum principle. This sounds less like a calculation tool and more like a fundamental rule. Why is it important?
It really is fundamental. You can think of it as a vital sanity check. Connects the abstract mathematical results back to physical intuition, back to reality.
How so? Give me the analogy.
Okay. Think about something like heat diffusion or chemical concentration. If you start with a non-negative temperature everywhere and you only add non-negative heat sources, you wouldn't expect the temperature to suddenly drop below zero anywhere.
No, that would violate basic physics.
Exactly. The maximum principle for these SPDEs, specifically for the linear version discussed in Theorem 3.4, provides that same guarantee mathematically. It says, if your initial condition, like the starting temperature, is non-negative, and any forcing terms, like heat sources or added chemicals, are also non-negative, then the solution dollar itself will remain non-negative for all future times.
So even with all the randomness flying around, governed by these complex LPAL spaces, the solution still respects basic physical constraints like non-negativity.
That's precisely it. It ensures the mathematical machinery, however abstract, doesn't lead to physically nonsensical outcomes. It confirms a crucial aspect of stability and realism within this stochastic framework.
Okay, that brings us nicely together. What a journey. We started with the limitations of the classic TODO2 theory, how its rigid structure demanded unrealistic smoothness from the real-world inputs just to get a usable solution.
Right, the $2 prior problem.
Then we saw how shifting to LPLR theory, using that flexibility in the exponent power with the Topiendi-Duke condition, along with powerful tools like maximal regularity, allowed us to overcome this.
It shifted the burden. making the requirements on the inputs much more manageable.
And this opened the door to rigorously solving complex quasi-linear equations, even those driven by incredibly singular noise like space-time white noise, and importantly, anchored the whole thing with principles like the maximum principle, ensuring physical relevance.
It's a great example of how developing more abstract, more flexible mathematical tools provides very practical advantages for modeling complex random phenomena.
So wrapping up, what's the final thought you want to leave our listeners with? Something provocative based on this deep dive?
Well, we touched on the maximum principle guaranteeing non-negativity. And the source itself briefly mentions other applications, like proving the non-explosion of solutions for certain nonlinear SBDEs, basically guaranteeing the system doesn't blow up.
Right, ensuring long-term stability.
Exactly. So if this L-Bowell theory provides the mathematical foundation to handle extreme noise and guarantee fundamental properties like non-negativity and non-explosion, it makes you wonder, how far can we push this? How effectively can this refined L-Bowell framework ultimately be used to predict, and perhaps even control, the long-term stable behavior of highly volatile, seemingly chaotic systems across all sorts of fields? Is making chaos truly predictable, in a stable sense, the ultimate horizon this work points towards?
A fascinating question. Food for thought indeed.